Okay, good evening. Thank you everyone for coming. Apologize for the late start with that time of the year. Now we switched this. It used to be we had the class before davening, now davening's before us. So we're on the other hand, now we don't have an ending time, so we can just keep going and going and going and going. Thank you very much for coming. I was asked to speak about the difference between men and women relationships. So we'll talk a little bit. Men are from Mars, I guess the Jewish version. You know, there's a couple that comes to the rabbi and says, you know, we're having trouble. We're just fighting all the time. Says, why is that? So before we got married, we made a deal. We knew that we both have very strong personality types. You know, we both could be confrontational. So we made a compromise before the wedding that we're going to divide up all the areas in the house. All the big things, all the big decisions, my husband's in charge of that. And all the small decisions, so she says, I, the wife, I'm the woman, I'll be in charge of the small things, my husband in charge of the big things. Okay, so turns to the husband, he says, it sounds like a good plan. Why is there a conflict here? What's the issue? He says, well, let me explain to you what a big issue is that I'm in charge of. If you want to know what the U.S. policy is versus Iran and how we should interact with them, that's a big issue. So that's up to me. She says, my wife says, I don't have to tell you anything about that. If you want to know what we should do to solve, you know, the displaced refugee problem in Syria, that's a big problem that I can deal with that one. You want to know the small issues in the house? Where we should live? Who pays the credit card bills? How much I'm allowed to spend? Those are all the small issues that that my wife takes care of. So you can see there's a little bit of a conflict. So I apologize that the diagram that I have on here, the first picture is not in black and white, but on the thing that I took it from, it's blue versus red. So the mission is to go to Gap to buy a pair of pants. So let's follow the female. The female hits, I think, every single store in there. Makes a detour at Macy's, somehow ends up in JCPenney, maybe by Sears, gets to Gap in 3 hours and 26 minutes and spends $876. The man's mission is to go to the Gap, buy a pair of pants, he's in there 6 minutes and out, he doesn't even blink. $33, shine, he's on. So we have a difference in approach. And again, obviously these are generalizations, and this obviously the present company is excluded, none of this applies to any women sitting here, it doesn't apply to anyone. But of course not, but the truth of the matter is there are differences, and I want to talk a little bit about what the differences are. But to ignore the differences is it's wrong, but it's foolish because it denies both masculine and the female energy that's present that Hashem put into the creation, and to just say there's no difference, everyone's the same. It's wrong, and it denies a person the opportunity to come to their full potential. So we're chas v'shalom, God forbid, we never say that one is better or worse. That's not all we're talking about, but they're equal. As Rabbi Yudin, my Rebbe, points out, two sides of the same coin, the male and female, but there's powers, there's talents, and there's abilities that, in general, one side has and the other one does not so strong in the area. And there's other powers that one side has and the other is not so strong in that area. So I like to just begin with the scale. We get a lot of pictures, a little visual learning, that it's equal. That the male and females are equal. There's a quote here from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. After thousands of years of male dominance, we now stand at the beginning of a feminine era, when women will rise to their appropriate prominence, and the entire world will recognize the harmony between man and woman. So really, we have to understand that there is a harmony, that there's not supposed to be a conflict, there's not supposed to be the big issues versus the small issues. But because Hashem created us, God created us in certain ways, so we have certain tendencies, and the goal is to focus on those things. Sometimes males can get caught up in the small details and lose the big picture. They tell a story about a man. He's a wealthy man. He's very stingy, and a poor guy comes to his house and he asks him for a handout. He's hungry. He says, I'm sorry. I don't do that. Go to the local food pantry. I'm not giving. He says, please. I'm starving. I haven't eaten in days. No, he says, please, anything you can take. He says, anything? Yeah, I'll take anything. He says, I think I have a smelly piece of fish from last week. Let me go check the garbage. The guy gets out. He says, yeah, I've got some fish. Hands him the stinky fish. The guy says, thank you so much. He eats it. And you know, everyone knows, stinky fish, not too healthy. So the guy gets sick. He has to go to the hospital. So the man says, oh my goodness, the man's in the hospital. I have to do a mitzvah. I have to go visit the sick man. So he goes to the hospital and he visits the sick man. And unfortunately, his situation deteriorates and he passes away. So the man comes on the next day. Wow, it's a mitzvah. I have to go to the funeral to go to escort the dead person. So he goes there, and then afterwards, this poor person had relatives, so he has to go make a shiva call. So he comes home and he's glowing from 25 years. His wife hasn't seen him with such a smile on his face. He says, "What are you so happy about?" He says, "I did four mitzvahs with one stinky piece of fish. I hosted somebody. I went to visit the sick. I paid a funeral call. I went to shiva." The point is, sometimes we get so caught up on the small things that we lose, and we don't understand the big picture. So, I want to ask a question. Where is the first place in the Torah that the word love is used? Where do you think? It's early on. Where's the first time you find the word love mentioned in the Torah? What? We have loving Hashem. That's later on. That's many, many chapters later. Even before the mitzvah, the kaz of V'ahavtes Hashem Elokecha, where do you find the first mention of love in the Torah? So Jacob, Yitzchak, and Rebecca, that's the second time. There's one even before that. It does not say that Abraham loved Sarah, but it says Abraham loved his son Isaac. His son Isaac. Now, of all the kind, it's interesting where it talks about by the Akedah, where God is commanding him to take his only son, his son whom he loves. He says he uses the verb Asher Ahavta, the one that you love. That's the first time the love is mentioned. Now, following the thread, someone mentioned the very next time you find is that same person, Isaac, Yitzchak, is talked about love for his wife. So the commentators point out something very insightful. In order to love another, one has to be loved themselves. And it's very interesting because Yitzchak, Isaac himself, received that love from his father. He was able to give that over to others. And many times in male-female relationships, it's not so much about who your partner is, it's about who you are. And the goal of a male-female relationship is to bring out the best. It doesn't mean that the person has to be against you all the time, but in a healthy relationship, one is challenged to grow and to respond to the other person's. And there's a beautiful word for the word for intimacy. Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak James says, intimacy, you read it as into me, see. Look into me. Look to see who I am. There's obviously realm for physical intimacy, but physical intimacy is really not a substitute for emotional connections on the deepest level. So it's important to note, again, the first case of love that we have is Abraham for his son Isaac. And after Isaac himself is an object and received love, therefore he can give over that love towards others. So that's one of the things that we talk about a lot in male-female relationships. So I was listening to a talk by Rabbi Jacobson, and he told a very interesting story of a couple that came to speak with him. And every little thing that the wife asked her husband to do infuriated him. Nothing crazy, you know, please go to the store and pick up some milk. You know, don't please take out the garbage. If the baby's crying, please change the diaper, whatever it is. It wasn't like anything. It wasn't like asking, major things. And it bothered him. And it took some while to figure out what exactly was frustrating this husband. So he'd get inwardly angry, like you're not exploding, you implode, right? You keep boiling up. Then every week or whatever, every month or so, he just explode, like you lose it, and then you calm back down. So it turns out after some time, it became clear that he was bothered by. He felt like his wife was trying to control him. And telling him what to do. This had nothing to do with the wife. She was a very sweet, gentle lady. And he himself was a nice guy. But he had a lot of baggage, a lot of emotional issues that had never been resolved from an earlier time when he felt growing up that his whole house was just told what to do. I'm a shmata, I'm a rag, I'm just someone who tells me what to do. And he felt like his wife was continuing in that. It had nothing to do with it whatsoever. So many times when there are issues of conflict, it very often, many times, it does not have to do with actually the person themselves that they're in a conflict with. It has to do with other unresolved issues. So when we have couples and, talking about these things, sometimes it's very hard to really get to the root of the matter. If you look on the second page, another quote, it says, a woman was having communication problems, came to see the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The woman said her husband was consumed with his work, and when he finally found time to speak to her, he criticized her and ordered her around. The husband said that his wife had no respect for him and didn't listen to any of his suggestions. Why do you think your wife should listen to you? Said the Rebbe. He asked. Because a woman must listen to her husband, he replied. Why should a woman listen to her husband? The Rebbe asked. Because the man is master of the house. No, said the Rebbe. The first thing that you as a man must follow is the edict that you should honor his wife more than he does himself. And then the righteous woman will have a husband she can respect and love. If the man does not fulfill his role, then it's the woman who must respectfully bring it to his attention. Hi.
Welcome.
So what he's pointing out is that we, in Judaism, we talk about interpersonal relationships, the roles of men and women. In America, you have like the Bill of Rights, right?
I have the right to do this, I have the right to bear arms, I have the right to vote, I have the right, I have the right.
It's coming to me, right? We say like it's coming to me. But in Judaism, there's no such thing as a Bill of Rights. Do you know what there is? There's a Bill of Obligations. You know why you have rights? Because I have an obligation to provide that for you. Not because it's coming to you as a sense of self, and that you're entitled to anything. A person has obligation towards others, not to harm anybody, not to speak negatively about them, not to gossip about people. So you get your rights, but not because it's coming to you, but because others provide them towards you. And we have to understand that we have an obligation towards others. So there are, in halacha, there are obligations a man towards a woman and toward the woman towards the husband. But it goes both ways. And to say, it's coming to me. No, nothing's coming to you. You have an obligation to focus. That's what he's bringing out over here. Contemporary society is just beginning to delve into the true distinctions between men and women. Besides the obvious physiological differences, there are also differences between men and women to think, speak, and behave. So I heard a cute thought. He says, men are waffles and women are spaghetti. What does that one mean? You know, like a waffle? So a good waffle has the ridges. And when you pour the syrup, you have to get the syrup inside the little hole. Because chas v'shalom, God forbid, it shouldn't spill out outside into the next thing. You got to get it right in the waffle place. Because it's self-contained. Men think so compartmentalized. It's cut and dry. It's exactly the way it's supposed to be. Again, generalizations, but generalizations are generally true. That's the way men think. And sometimes a woman will turn to her husband and say, what are you thinking about? And he'll say, nothing. So she doesn't realize he's really thinking about nothing. What do you mean not thinking about anything? Now, spaghetti is not compartmentalized. Nobody takes one strand of spaghetti and stays isolated all by itself. Spaghetti, you get the sauce and the marinara and you get the fettuccine. It's all intertwined. Everything is mixed together. There's an integration that takes place. Women are able to take and to pull and to connect and make certain things. And women can move from one thing seamlessly to another topic. Men are cut and dry. It's a file cabinet. And the way women have it, it's spaghetti. It's all into the, no one wants to eat one piece of spaghetti. He wants a lot of things together. You want the sauce to connect everything. So when we think of it as that women come from a place that the Sfarim explain in Kabbalah and Jewish mysticism, it's called Gevura. Gevura literally means strength, but it doesn't mean strength in terms of physical strength, how much a person can bench press. That's not the Gevura, that's not the talk, the type of strength. Women, the root of the feminine energy is what's called self-restraint, to hold back. The male component, the masculine component, comes from the idea of what's called chesed, of giving of oneself. So on its basic level, and obviously there are permutations of it, but the male is the one who gives, and the female is the one who holds back. So let's explain a little bit more like this. In order to understand the essential nature of man and woman, we must do away with human subjectivity and look through God's eyes. Every human being, man and woman, was created for the same purpose, to fuse body and soul in order to make themselves and the world a better and holier place in the service of God. There's absolutely no difference between a man and a woman. The only difference is the way that service manifests itself. So, we find ourselves now in a very special time period. We're in the month of what's called Adar Sheni, the second Adar. Do you know how many months there are in the Jewish calendar? It's a trick question.
Depends on the year.
Okay, you get extra dessert. There could be a month of 12 years. Or like it is right now, we happen to be in a year that's a 13-year month, and we happen to be in the 13th month. Why is that? Well, we have to know a little bit of how the Torah sets up the agricultural and the lunar cycle. God willing, next month we'll all be celebrating Passover. And the Torah writes that it has to happen in the springtime. Okay, why not? Well, the lunar calendar has 29 and a half, I'm estimating, 29 and a half days in one lunar rotation. Now, the Rambam, Maimonides, I believe we've spoken about in previous classes, who lived in the 1100s, before telescopes,
So Rambam writes the calculation as to how much is the lunar cycle, and he was right to the fourth decimal point. Before they even put somebody on the moon, the Rambam wrote exactly how much it was, which is great. Okay, so now let's flip to, that's the lunar calendar. So if you have 12 months of 29 and change days, a lunar calendar has 354 days. 354. The solar calendar, we know, obviously has how much? 365. So we're at 11-day difference. Okay, which is not the end of the world. If you start the lunar calendar and the solar calendar at the exact same time, so you go, and then there'll be an 11-day difference between the first year, right? This is 354 and 365, 11 days. And then it goes again, there's a 22-day difference. And then a 33, 44, 45. And it comes out within a few things. If you're using the solar and lunar calendar, Passover, Pesach, is not going to be in the springtime. It'll be in December. Right? It's going to throw off the whole thing. And the Torah says you have to have it. So in the quote-unquote olden days, in the times of the Talmud, so they used to have witnesses will come and testify as to when they saw the new moon. If the moon is a 29 and a half day of the cycle, it could either be a 29-day month or a 30-day month. It's either one or the other. So they would testify, we saw the new moon, and therefore they would figure out when exactly the new month, the Rosh Chodesh, was. Unfortunately, that system is not in practice today. We have a set calendar. The calendar has been set that there is a 19-year cycle. Out of those 19-year cycles, 7 out of the 19 years will be a leap year. Right? And it works out. It resets. It goes, it calibrates, and then you add a month to catch up, you add a month to catch up, you add a month to catch up. Every 19 years, I know everyone here is under 38, but when you were 19, your Hebrew and English birthday were the same. When you become 38, your Hebrew birthday and your English birthday will be the same as well. And it's done for a reason, in order to keep it. But now I want to explain a little bit more the deeper symbolism behind what that is. Again, as we know, the moon, it waxes and it wanes. Sometimes it will disappear for days at a time. The sun... Welcome. The sun is consistent, as we say, day in, day out. The sun is always rising and setting, you know, it's consistency. The energy of the sun is compared to the masculine. And the energy of the moon, in the Kabbalah and Jewish mysticism, is compared to the female aspect. Whereas, the man, to use a stereotype, like a son, you could have a type of person, a male who... person who goes to work, he leaves his house at 8:19 every single, for the last 36 years, he's left his house at 8:19 to catch the 8:30 train. You could say that he has one book by his bedside, and he will read that book from the beginning to the end. Even if it's boring, it doesn't matter. His wife, on the other side, will have three books there, because if she gets bored after page two, she has another one to choose to. The woman is floating. The woman is the moon, is the lunar, is that type of energy, which comes and goes. It's not better or worse. It's just different. The male is the consistency, the one who is like clockwork. And when we combine the two energies, which we're supposed to do, these two facets of the male energy and the female energy come together and unite. The Jewish calendar is set up like that. That happens in all types of relationships. Let me give you an example. You have a business. And at a board meeting, you have two very different personality types. And this does not have anything to do with male versus female. It could be two females, it could be two males. You have one personality type who's a conservative. We've been running the company this way for the last 25 years. This way we have to continue to run the company. We know exactly what our profits are going to be. And have a younger guy, a little bit of a whippersnapper, says, no, with these dry, old things, we have to be innovative, we have to be risky, we have to think, we have to move. And they can't connect because he sees himself as being foolish. He sees the other one as being old-fashioned. There's change and there's consistency. And the balance in Judaism is to have exactly both that. To have the consistency and yet to have the change. To have that constant state of renewal. To be moon-like yet having the sun's consistency. And that's the ultimate in a relationship. When the male and female aspects come together. And we each have both those inside of us. We each have male and female aspects that are working in coordination together. And the point is to bring them both out. So now we'll continue on the what says, what are the differences between men and women? Man and woman represent two forms of divine energy. They're the male and female elements of a single soul. God is neither masculine nor feminine, but has two forms of emanation. The masculine form, which is more aggressive, and the female form, which is more subtle. For a human being to lead a total life, he or she must have both forms of energy. The power of strength, the power of subtlety. The power of giving, and the power of receiving. Ideally, these energies are merged seamlessly. Men are physically stronger. By nature, they're usually more aggressive and externally oriented. In contrast, a woman usually embodies the ideal of inner dignity. Some people confuse such subtlety with weakness. In truth, it's stronger than the most aggressive physical force imaginable. True human dignity does not shout. It's a strong, steady voice that speaks from within. The nature of a woman, while subtle, is not weak. And the nature of man, while aggressive, is not brutish. For man and women to be complete, they must each possess both energies. The answer is not for men and women to try to be alike. All men and women must be themselves, realizing that God has given each the unique abilities which to pursue our goals, and our primary responsibility is to take full advantage of those abilities. So, I want to read to you something cute I found. This is the definition of a man. Phone conversations are over in 30 seconds flat. A 5-day vacation requires only one suitcase. He can go to the bathroom without a support group. You get extra credit for the slightest act of thoughtfulness. If someone forgets to invite you to something, he or she can still be your friend. 3 pairs of shoes are more than enough. You can quietly watch a game with your buddy for hours without ever thinking, he must be mad at me. You could drop by to see a friend without having to bring a little gift. If another guy shows up at the party in the same outfit, you just might become lifelong friends. The same hairstyle lasts for years, maybe decades. You can do your nails with a pocket knife. I think that that we understand there's differences between them. And again, the healthiness in a relationship within ourselves and with our spouses and with others is to realize that there are differences. And those differences are to be cherished and to be harnessed into making something that's greater than ever could exist by one by themselves. I'm going to speak a lot. And then questions at this point? Keep going? We're good? Yeah, okay. What is true liberation for both sexes? Though feminism rightfully calls for the end of male domination and abuse, and for equal rights for women, it's vital to get to the root of the distortion, that our focus in life as man or woman must not be to simply satisfy our own ego or needs, but to serve God. True women's liberation does not mean merely seeking equality within a masculine world, but liberating the divine feminine aspects of women's personality and using them for the benefit of humankind. It's interesting. It says in Kabbalah books that before the Messiah comes, before Mashiach comes, we had a class on Mashiach, so before Mashiach comes, it says there's going to be a very strong awakening of the female energy. And if you look, Gloria Steinem and feminists, there was that. There really has been throughout the 60s, 70s, there has been a strong, strong push. And it was, for the most part, not always, but for the most part, it came from a very, very noble place. That people felt there was some sort of discrimination, there was an inequality. Now, we're not saying that every type of feminism is a good thing. There's things that are very, very dangerous about that. But the fact that idea there's an awakening of that energy is a good thing. After so many years of male dominance, we're standing on the threshold of the true feminine era. It's now time for the woman to rise to her true prominence when the subtle power of the feminine energy is truly allowed to nourish the overt power of the masculine energy. We've already proven we can use our strength to slay the demons around us. Let us now learn to nurture the godliness within. So this idea about nurturing something, and even in a biological sense. So when a woman is pregnant, so she takes the seed that's been formed and she nurtures it and she develops it. She causes it to grow. The entire gestation period is that of taking potential and bringing it into actual. That is the koach, the strength, the power of women, not just Jew, any woman, that the ability to take something that exists in potential and to bring it out. There's a saying, if misinterpreted, it could be very, very dangerous. I said this over at my engagement party with my wife. The Gemara, the Talmud says, I forget what exactly it says. Eze isha kashera. What's a kosher woman? What's a good Jewish woman? Who does what her husband wants. So I looked at my father-in-law, I looked at my mother-in-law, and she got the gun loaded, ready to shoot her. And I had to explain exactly what the Mittler Rebbe once explained. What does it mean? The kosher woman does the will of her husband. Men want a lot of things. Big dreams. But it's very hard sometimes for men to sit down and actually bring that into fruition. To have a plan. To do something. They could sit on the couch for hours drinking beer and having potato chips and telling you what they would do when they win the lottery. But to actually to do something practical, to get up and to do that, so to be focused, to be harnessed the energy, to being productive, that's hard. So it's hard for a male to do that. A woman, a kosher woman, takes what her husband wants to do and makes him able to do that. Who enables him and guides him and strengthens him and encourages him and enables him to achieve all of his dreams and his goals in a very practical way. There's a Russian author, I forgot the name of it, but he tells a story of a man who was once promised that however much land he can cover in a day and stake four claims, that'll be his to keep. And the man is, as most men are, excited about the idea. So he starts off at the break of day and he runs hours and hours. He puts one stake and then he goes and he tries to make the largest circle. And then he sees as it's starting, the sun's going after noon, it's starting to set in the other direction. So he keeps pushing himself and then finally he goes, I'll run even faster to make it back home. And he's running and he's running and he's running and he's running. And the sun's starting to set, he's not going to make it. And this very dramatic ending as the sun is setting, he's pushing and pushing. Finally, with his last bit of energy, he comes and he finally makes the whole circle back. And he comes, he puts the last stake down at his starting point, and he drops dead. And says, you know what you got? You know how much land you acquired? You acquired your 6 feet. That's the land you acquired. With all your great ambitions, with all your big things, it wasn't practical. The male energy is big. The female energy is what harnesses and makes it practical, makes it real. So, who's the kosher woman? The kosher wife is the one who can take that drive and to bring it down into practical, realistic terms.
So, I have a question. So, the trifwife can't do that.
Kosher here means does not mean as in
eating.
As in eating.
I've never heard the terminology.
Oh, really? Kosher? Kashera?
I've heard like a kosher marriage, a kosher baby, you know. Everything. I've never heard the term kosher.
Oh, no, so here they're applying it as, that's a good question. How would you translate the word kosher?
Well, of course, I relate that to food.
kosher
also,
food?
Also,
yeah.
But also done in the right way, under the right circumstances, under Jewish law. I don't know if I want to use the word law, but kosher means that everything's done in the proper
way. The guy, know the word kosher. Like, it seems like something smells not kosher about that. I heard a newscast. Like, they're not certifiable, right? How would you change the word kosher?
Holy. It's something holy.
Kadosh. Kadosh is the word for holy. What's kosher? We everyone uses the word kosher. There's like a few words. Every guy knows the word to be a nudnik, right? They all know that, right? They know what a schmooze is, right? They know what kosher is. They know these words. But what does the word kosher literally mean? Well, kosher woman, kosher man, kosher food. Okay, I can tell you what that means for easily.
Sounds to me like a man is nothing without a woman.
Okay, the Gemara says he's half a man. The Gemara says he's half a man. That is he's a chatzi ish is the phrase that the Talmud uses. He's half a man without a woman.
That's why he's supposed to cling to her.
That's true. So they cling together. Correct. But I want to go back to this point. What does it mean to be kosher? To follow rules and obligations, okay.
To do what you're supposed to be doing.
To do what you're supposed to be doing, okay. Mara, what do you say? You thought one wasn't going to call on you. What does it mean to be kosher? It's a hard word to translate, right?
Can we be like servient to God?
Subservient?
Follow okay. Certain laws?
To follow the laws? Okay. So the law is, one second, let me just play with that for a second. The law is, if an animal is not slaughtered appropriately, you can't eat it. So if I'm following the law, I'm being kosher by not eating the non-kosher? If being kosher means following the law, so then I'm following the law, so I'm kosher by not eating the non-kosher, right? How would that work? I think the word kasher will translate as being appropriate. Something that's appropriate. The other words are good. They're excellent definitions, but it's a hard word to translate. Hechsher in Hebrew is something that's a preparation for something. So kosher is a way of making something that's appropriate for its use. So we talk about a kosher woman, Isha Kashera. So you could have the same phrase in other areas as well, but it would mean a woman who is doing what she is supposed to be doing. A man who's kosher is doing what he is supposed to be doing. We talk about something being kosher, it means that this is the way it's supposed to be. In the deeper that, that's in line with divine energy. That's really how we work out the idea of being kosher. Okay, let me look at a few more sources. Where it says action now, on the last page. Men and women must realize their respective equal roles. Right? The keyword is equal, and strive to complement each other in their shared struggle to improve life. In order to correct the abuse of male dominance, men must concentrate on using their dominant qualities for the good. They must use their strength to protect and preserve the feminine character, helping women realize their true potential and revealing godliness, which the world so desperately needs today. Learn about what it means to be a man or a woman, about masculine and feminine energy. Learn to live up to your potential, to balance these energies to lead a productive and meaningful life, a godly life. And finally, learn to appreciate and respect your male or female counterpart. So I wanted to show you the last source on the page is the beginning of the Torah, chapter 4, Genesis. It says, V'ha'adam yoda eschava ishto. The man, right, Adam, knew his wife, Eve. So knowing yada is an expression, it's a euphemism for being intimate. V'tahar v'telet et Kayin, she gave birth to Cain. V'tahar kanisi ish es Hashem, I've acquired a man with God. So, of all the verbs that could be used to talk about intimacy, it uses the word yediyah, a knowledge. And that speaks volumes about the type of relationship between men and women. That there's a connection there. When you know somebody, they make it's a bad joke, but I'll say it anyway. Like there's like the person like you try to fool when you're dating, like you'd always put on your light, and then you actually get to know them once you actually get married, right? Like it's true. We try to fool our spouses, and then right? What?
A good first impression,
right? So as long as the first impression is one or two dates or three or four, and then they find out, right? There's a play I remember in high school called The Man Who Came to Dinner, a guest who's coming to dinner. It was all about a couple that was engaged, and they were supposed to have like the night where the two families were going to meet. So guest was coming to dinner, and he pulled a shtick. He had them come the night beforehand. It was Hoffman and Carter. I remember they were the playwrights out. I forget the title. It was Guest Who's Coming In. The Man Who's Coming In was a different play. I think it was Guest Who's Coming In. Whatever it was, the whole point was she wanted to be real. Oh, no, that's when with the African-American.
Right.
No, that's a different play. That's where that she was dating. That's a different play. This was like in the 1920s it was written.
Oh, I know what play you're talking about, and I cannot remember the name.
Hoffman and Carter wrote it, but I forget the song. Guest Who's Coming In, the mannequin. The family came to dinner. Whatever it was, they were supposed to have the whole family reunion. What?
It was a dinner,
yeah, right? It was the wrong dinner. He brought his family to meet her family one night earlier, before like the floors got swept, and before all the things.
You can't take it with you.
What? You can't take it with you?
Yeah.
I think it's right. Yeah, you can't take it with you. So thank you. That was that. The whole idea was to show what's real, and we talk about dating and everyone you want, yes, and relationships, but intimacy means knowing what's real. What's real. And there's a story in the Tanakh, in the Torah. And you have to understand, when the Torah has stories, there's no Cinderella, everybody lives happily ever after. Those are like the Disney, that's not reality. The Torah stories are fraught with conflict, with tension. They're unresolved at the end. There's more questions that remain. If you're a serious reader of the Torah, then other than just, okay, everybody ends up happy, smiling, riding off into the sunset. And Rabbi Jacobson, I quoted earlier, gave an example of this. So imagine you have a tablecloth, and it's so nicely on the table. It's iron, it's beautiful. It's nicely. See, okay, I see it's flat, there's nothing there. But if you put a tablecloth down, and there's a few bumps, and a thing like here, one second, what's going on underneath the surface? Pull up the tablecloth and figure out what's going on under there. When you look at the stories in the Torah, Joseph and his brothers, Jacob and Esau fighting with each other, the two sisters, you have to pull up the tablecloth and figure out what's going on over there. What message is the Torah teaching us with this? So I'm going to throw it out there. I might have time to do it justice and go through the whole story, but there's one aspect that you read this story and you're like, what's going on? Imagine the following scene. A man and woman get married and they have the wedding, they dance, and then they go home, they go to the hotel room, and there's a blackout that night. And the following morning, the sun rises, and he looks, and he says, "Whoops, you're not the one I thought I was getting married to."
What? And then you look back, and that's the story with Jacob and his two wives. Right? Jacob thought he was marrying Rachel all along, and in the morning he finds out, whoops, I married Leah. It's like, what's good? The Torah's begging for us to analyze this. Like, what does that mean? So it's a beautiful idea that Rachel and Leah represent two parts, two types of your spouse. Leah, the name Leah itself in Hebrew, so I'm a coach, but Leah itself means exhausted. That's what it means. Leah means to be tired, exhausted. Rachel, Rachel is a sheep, sweet and docile. So the commentaries explain that there's the spouse that you think you're marrying, who's Rachel. You think your spouse, he or she, is calm, is docile, is the perfect spouse. And the morning you wake up and you found out you got married to Leah. That's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing at all. What the Torah is bringing out to us, that most of the time, 90% plus, people get married to the best possible spouse for them. It might not might be who you thought you were supposed to marry. It might not be the personality type that you thought you were supposed to marry. But that's what it means when I talk about Adam and Chava, that they got married. One of the blessings that we give to a couple, right, when they're standing under the chuppah, is we give them, they should have a marriage like they should be as happy as Adam and Chava. So why were Adam and Eve so happy? Why were they so happy? So the simple answer is because there were no mothers-in-law. But the real answer is because there was no one else. This is my wife. Oh, but you know what? Maybe someone else would have been better for me. Maybe my high school sweetheart was the one I was supposed to have married. And she's thinking, my husband, okay, but the next one, he's a nice guy. He helps out, he takes out the garbage. My husband doesn't do anything. Didn't think like that. The couple, the blessing that we give to a brand new couple right after they're getting married at the chuppah, the Sheva Brachas, is that they should be happy just like Adam and Eve. It's not to say that it hasn't been any, in the last 5,000 years, there haven't been any other couples that are happily married. We should have that same type of approach and that intimacy. When the Torah tells us that Adam Yoda Eschav, he knew that they had a real connection. Yes, there was a physical connection as well, and that's important, but there was also a spiritual, an emotional, intellectual, psychological bonding between the two of them. And that's the male and female aspects coming together. So I know we talk about a lot of esoteric ideas, but at the end of the day, when all the dust settles, so when Torah talks about men are from Mars, right, all the things, they're two different entities. Male and female are two entirely, one's not better than the other, but they have very different roles. Very different responsibilities, very different powers, talents. And to harness each one and try to pretend to be a man, pretends to be a woman, a woman pretends to be a man, you're denying yourself. You're not in touch with who you really are, what Hashem made you in that particular way. So the idea is to have a combination between the two, between this female energy, which is represented by the moon, which is constantly changing and evolving and growing and renewing itself, like the moon renews itself, like the women's cycle renews itself every month. And then there's the sun, not the sun, S-O-N, S-U-N, the male, which is consistent, which is connection, which is tradition, which is bonding, which is being there. And the two need to come together. Every single person inside them, regardless of gender, has both aspects. And the trick is to combine both of them, to have a commitment to Judaism which is strong. And yet at the same time, it's not boring. It's not stale. It's something that's fresh and exciting. To take that male-female component to all aspects of our life with relationships. A marriage needs to be constantly, it has to be solid, but also has to have a sense of excitement to it, of newness. So we take these ideas of what the male and female energies represent, and we realize that this is a formula. It's a formula for success, and to harness these energies and to utilize them in our own lives and our relationships, then that's really what the Torah perceives as being an ideal relationship and how a husband and wife should come together. I don't know if that's exactly the topic that you wanted me to speak upon, but I tried to address it. Are there any questions or anything about that for what I said tonight? Just in previous classes, anything you wanted to ask? Oh, safe. I was okay.
So can I?
Sure.
This is amazing, as all your classes. I think it gives us a very good foundation to look at the male and female role. We were talking in our classes a lot about the woman's role, and one of the topics that came up again and again was reading from the Torah and all the male obligations that a woman doesn't have. And although as a group we understand that a lot of people are coming from, let's say, a conservative or reform background, and that's what they're